So I think the thing that I would say to my younger self is, instead of trying to translate what that means as a tactical skill, I think what I would say is to those that are listening, instead of trying to kind of position yourself as somebody who is resourceful or knows how to kind of deal with uncertainty, which is all true, I think what I would say is, I would go back and tell people the things that Mozambique taught me and the type of person that I became in the process.
Good afternoon and welcome to Jobs with Jody, a podcast produced by NPCA's Global Reentry Program. I'm your host, Jody Hammer. I'm excited to have you here with me today to listen into another installment of our Conversations with RPCB Leaders in Action. And today's guest is Bakhtash Ahadi, RPCV and award-winning documentary filmmaker, as well as a motivational speaker, facilitator, and a human rights activist. Bakhtash, thank you so much for being here with me today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to chat with you today and just, you know, hear more about your awesome story. And of course, I had the pleasure of meeting you right when you got back from Peace Corps and, you know, coming straight back and when I was running the Career Center in Peace Corps headquarters. So I feel like I, you know, met you way back when, and you've done such amazing things since then. I'm just excited to be visiting with you here. So to kick us off, Bakhtash, can you go ahead and maybe to share a little bit more about your interesting background and, you know, how that has really shaped you on a personal and professional level?
I'd be delighted to do that. It is lovely to be in conversation with you. I do remember those days when I got back from the Peace Corps in 2008. It's amazing how time goes by so fast and how things change. So to your question, I think it's probably useful to share that I was born in Afghanistan. My family fled during the Afghan-Soviet War in 1984. We spent 2 years in makeshift homes and refugee camps in Pakistan for 2 years before coming to the United States. And so I came to the United States at the age of five and had an upbringing in a small little town in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. My family was privileged enough to be sponsored by a Lutheran church by the name of St. Paul's. And St. Paul's was responsible largely for helping my family assimilate to American life. And so maybe it's also important to share as it pertains to Peace Corps that my father first fell in love with the idea of America by being exposed to a Peace Corps volunteer in Kandahar in the 1960s, and his volunteer's name was Eric.
Right.
And so he learned about America and in Kandahar, which is also the home to the Taliban, which is also an interesting thing to share because, well, people wouldn't think of America and Kandahar in the same sentence and the word love connecting those pieces.
Right.
And so that's where my father fell in love with the idea of America. And that set him on a trajectory of then eventually working for USAID in Kabul in the 1970s. Before the Soviets invaded. And so maybe if we can kind of just jump into the story is, you know, when the Soviets invaded, my father, well, he was quite outspoken against the Soviet regime. And what was happening, I think it's probably important to share, is that, you know, when people think of the Afghan-Soviet War, they think of the Mujahideen, they think of the war and the fighting, but that largely took place, Jody, in the countryside. What was happening in the cities was that people were disappearing that were against or going against or speaking out against the Soviets. So my father knew that his turn was going to come based on information that he was given. And so he got really scared. He basically told my mother, tomorrow, get ready to leave, go to work and tell your employers that when you come home, you're going to come home to breastfeed your son. And when that happens, I will send for a taxi and we'll reconvene outside of Kabul. And that's where I'm going to leave. Don't tell anybody except your parents the moment the taxi arrives.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So my mother did exactly as my father asked her to do. She came home from work, scooped up my brother, myself, told her parents she was leaving, and she went outside. The taxi was ready for her, and it was her father-in-law, my father's father, that was going to escort her to meet my father, which happened. And then when we all reconvened outside of Kabul, my father had ties with the Mujahideen, who then put us on horseback, and essentially that's where our journey and our trek began, 7 days and 6 nights across the Hindu Kush mountain range into Pakistan. Exactly. By the graces of God, we were saved. We were shot at twice by Soviet gunships, quite literally. And we made it to Pakistan, and you know, my parents were trying to survive. They're trying to figure out what's going on. And eventually my father had the wherewithal to say, we need to go to Islamabad and we need to approach the American embassy. Try to essentially put in our case to see if that'll lead to anything. Because at that point, you know, Jody, it was interesting because nobody knew when the war was going to end. In fact, in 1984, it was in the middle of the whole thing. And so my father knew that he couldn't go back to Afghanistan. He had a wife, two young boys. So he went to the consular office, spoke to them, and essentially said, I work for the United States government. I work for USAID.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I have a letter of recommendation from Dr. Kerr, who is the director. And what's really curious is the diplomat, the consular office, officer there, knew Dr. Kerr, called him, and basically asked if my father's story made any sense and if it was legitimate. So Dr. Kerr said, absolutely, yes. I know Basir Hadi. I know his family. What he's sharing is absolutely true. We are granted a visa and a political asylum to come to the United States. And that's where St. Paul's sponsored my family to come to America. Where our journey in America began is through this small world of the Peace Corps and USAID and the American Embassy coming all together. And so that's what brought us to America.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. What a story. Quite the journey. I'm very glad you all made it safely.
Yeah.
And you grew up in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. That's a small little area.
Absolutely. Yeah. What's interesting about Carlisle, Pennsylvania is it always gets on the list of the top 25 most livable towns in America. And so we went from this place of complete chaos and uncertainty to this picturesque college town in Pennsylvania. And that's where we were raised. My parents, like many other immigrants, new to America at the time, were trying to figure it out. My mother did all types of odd jobs, was a cleaning lady, babysitter. My father worked at McDonald's. He was working at supermarkets. And eventually, my parents were able to kind of secure, well, after about 5-6 years, able to secure proper employment. My father eventually got a job with the state of Pennsylvania as a computer operator. And then my mother was the entrepreneur of the family. So she did a whole bunch of different roles. And well, let's just say she very much embraced the American mentality of being productive and getting things done.
Well, that's great. And what great role models for you growing up and such. I mean, I'm sure that was just really incredibly powerful as well.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I had a very Americanized way of seeing the world as a young person. I very much wanted to be like all of my friends. And there wasn't this semblance of, you know, Afghanistan on our radar because we were trying to assimilate. So at the home, we were very much Afghan, but outside the home, we were very much Americanized.
Mm-hmm.
And all that changed, Jody, when 9/11 happened.
Wow.
So the world changed when 9/11 happened. It brought Afghanistan back on the map for much of the world, especially brought it back on the map for me and my family.
Yeah.
And so 9/11 happened 1 week after I started college. So I went into school not knowing what this whole enterprise of higher education was about, actually. I didn't know what it was actually about.
Huh.
I just knew that you learn things and it eventually led to a job. And so when 9/11 happened, I basically became obsessed with the power of belief because the 9/11 hijackers did what they did based on a belief system. And so I became obsessed with this idea of what belief meant as a cultural experiment.
Right.
As a psychological experiment and even a political experiment. So I started taking courses in all those subjects. And I started to travel around the world. And I went to India for a year to study Indian culture and philosophy.
Wow.
Went to Charles University in Prague, studied international politics. And then when I eventually graduated, well, it's probably very important to share that the United States at that point had gone into Afghanistan, declared victory in Afghanistan, and now was heavily engaged in the war in Iraq. And when I graduated in 2005, Jody, I did not want to serve in Iraq. I didn't want to serve America in that way. So I did what made the most sense, is I decided to join the Peace Corps.
Yes, I was just going to ask you about, you know, your transition into Peace Corps after all of this and your, you know, upbringing as an immigrant. And how did that go over with your parents?
Yeah, well, lovely. I'm glad you asked. You know, it's interesting because I think historically speaking, the Peace Corps has been a relatively privileged organization. Like if you look at photos of those volunteers in the 60s and 70s going all over the world, they were wearing suits and ties, right? And so it's a very different demographic than I think of the Peace Corps of today in many ways.
Right.
And so many of my, so it's important to share that I served in the Peace Corps from 2005 until 2007. And so many people that I had served with, you know, their parents kind of planted that seed or they had the ability to kind of do it because of all scholarships and the like. And so I had a little bit of debt when I graduated from school. Mm-hmm. My parents were like, well, son, what are you going to do? Do you have a job? And I thought, well, how am I going to break this to him? And I basically said, you know, I'm going to join the Peace Corps. In fact, I'm waiting for my letter of invitation. I already applied 8 months earlier. And so I was waiting and waiting and waiting. I hadn't gotten it yet. And so when I graduated, I moved to Washington, D.C. and took an internship for free. So basically what that meant is I was working at the World Affairs Councils of America, where I mm-hmm. basically had to pay for everything, meaning my living expenses, right. accommodation, all that.
Such is the world of most internships still today. It's crazy.
Exactly. And so I remember telling my parents, they were just like, son, what are you doing with your life? Are you sure this is what you want to do? You know, they were basically saying, son, we took you out of this war-torn country and we brought you to America. Are you sure you don't want to pursue a more meaningful sort of path professionally? And so eventually got my letter of invitation to serve in Mozambique. And I told this to my, I shared this with my parents. And I got one of two responses. My mother was just like, son, where are you going? Where is Mozambique? What is in Africa? Why do you want to go there? And, you know, my father sat me down and he was like, are you sure you want to do this? And I said, yeah, look where it brought us. Look what it did to you.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. You know, really, on the one hand, your father knew Peace Corps. Peace Corps is partly what saved him, or in a sense, I mean, that learning English and getting the, you know, and that person, the connection, that's what helped to get him out and save his family. So I think that's a good point. Yeah.
Absolutely. So when I said this to my father, he was like, I completely understand. I trust that you know what you're doing. And I said, I don't, but I feel right about this. Right? I don't know what I'm doing, but I feel right about this. I got my parents' blessing. They said, you know what you're doing. Figure it out. We trust that you're going to be all right. And so soon after, I went into staging in Philadelphia for 2-3 days, met the rest of the cohort, 75 of us, and then we were on a plane to Mozambique. And oh gosh, what a journey.
Yeah. What program were you in?
Yeah. So I was part of the education program and I was an English teacher to young high school students from 8th grade to 10th grade initially. And then I branched off and did other things, but I was an English teacher.
That is awesome. So you had a wonderful, very meaningful experience there. You came back, and I know that shortly after you came back, you were in my office in the Peace Corps Career Center, and I met you, and that was wonderful. And then, boom, you were gone. Tell us a little bit about where you went then.
Well, thank you for setting up that way. I wish it was that seamless. I wish it was that effortless. I think what was really difficult, maybe it's probably important to kind of share, because this is probably something a lot of Peace Corps volunteers go through. At least this is what I went through, is this idea of trying to figure out how to position yourself after something like the Peace Corps. Yeah, I found it to be extremely difficult to even capture the language of what I did and how that actually meant anything to employers in America. Like, it's really interesting, you know, like I think in the Peace Corps, if you tell people you're an education volunteer or you're a health volunteer or whatever they may be, employers want to know something tactically that you learned. And it's really hard because a lot of the things that existed and that I've done that I did in Mozambique didn't really apply to a modern day sort of environment, a professional environment. And so I think the best thing to kind of share at this point, in this juncture, is to think about, for those that are just coming back or relatively recent, is to say, what has your experience taught you about the nature of how to work together, the nature of variance and cultures?
Yeah.
The nature of the power of language and communication.
Yeah.
So these sorts of things, I think, would have been very, very useful for me to kind of think about.
It's a nice approach. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what that would have maybe eased my approach in terms of interviewing and kind of even talking to friends and family about what it is that I did.
Exactly. Because they just can't really understand. And that's part of, you know, the whole, you know, reverse culture shock. It's so much, I don't know for you, but for most people, coming back is so much harder than going, right? I mean, going, you're excited, you're going to this new place and you're learning with your cohort, but coming back, you're all alone in your, like, in this country that's yours, but you don't really identify as much anymore in some ways, maybe. And that's a challenge. So it sounds like it was more difficult than you expected, but you went back to Afghanistan and tell us what brought you back there and what you were doing.
Yeah. So what's really interesting is, you know, I eventually ended up getting a role for a consulting firm in the Washington, D.C. area. I did that for a year and a half, and I very much, well, let's just say I learned that I didn't want to do any more of that type of work. Yeah, I think there's a lot of value knowing what you like, and there's also a lot of value knowing what you don't like. And so I learned that I didn't want to do that type of work. And I just, well, let's just say the timing of the announcement of President Obama in December of 2009 was quite timely for me, because when he announced that the surge was going to be happening in Afghanistan, I spoke to a couple of my colleagues that I'd met in Washington, D.C. And a month later, Jody, I was on a plane to Afghanistan. So exactly. So I went back to Afghanistan to serve as a combat interpreter embedded with the Marines.
So you were literally on the front lines with the Marines, and you were the translator.
So I was on the front lines with the Marines as a translator to the Afghan military, specifically the Afghan commandos, who go out of the wire and engage the population. So what that actually looks like and what that actually means is, you know, the Marines are out there to do everything, right? Mm-hmm. So they do everything from engaging the local populace to figure out what needs they have, right? And so then they would transmit those messages to development workers that would go in and build wells, schools, clinics, which I was a part of. And then also too, going after Taliban insurgents or other insurgents. I got to see what war does to people, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I got to see what it was like to live in some of the most remote parts of Afghanistan, and I would say even the world. There were instances where we would show up in a village, a remote village in Badghis province, which is in the northwest of the country, and villagers would come up and ask, "Are you all the Russians? Who are you?" And this was in 2010, 2011, when I first started. I was there for three years total, from 2010 until 2013. So I got to learn about the country and its, well, and where it was and how the people thought. And the differences between these cultures, actually, and the nuances between even the variation within people in that country.
Right.
You know, I often tell people, like, Afghanistan is not a monolith, and neither is America. Like, what does it mean to be an American? How would you describe what an American is?
Yeah.
And this is a very interesting question to kind of pursue. And so I spent a lot of time in Afghanistan as a bridge between various parties. And I saw a lot of combat, what war does to people and how it impacts people.
I bet that was so difficult in so many ways. I mean, just seeing being on the front lines and being with, you know, where people are getting shot at, they're getting killed, they're getting, you know, that's just, it's part of a day-to-day.
It's part of the day-to-day. And what's really curious is it goes back to this idea of the power of belief. People are motivated by different beliefs. And, you know, in this instance, people, including myself, was very much interested in pursuing the belief of, well, I thought the Taliban and the insurgency of the Taliban, I just didn't want that for Afghanistan. And people that I was fighting with didn't want that for Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably important to kind of just put a pin in this, but 9/11 was such a monumental experience about the difference in cultural and religious beliefs of people.
Absolutely.
But if you remember the rhetoric of the time of that era, it was conversations, Jody, related to, like, conversations of good and evil, what was right, what was wrong. And so I share this with your audience because it's important to kind of think about the power of belief and how that manifests in the things that we do on a day-to-day. So I spent 3 years doing that, and I came back from Afghanistan. And a lot of people have asked me, why did you come back then? And what was the catalyst for you to come back? And I'd love to share, because a lot of people that I was working with, serving alongside, I could see that it was impacting us psychologically. Like, there are visible wounds that happen to us physically, and then there are the invisible wounds. And so I started to realize that I was becoming, well, let me just say that the idea of war and the phenomena of war became a normalizing experience.
So more kind of almost, were you becoming numb to it, do you feel like, or?
Well, I would say I would just say I became in some sense desensitized to the violence.
Yeah. Wow.
And once I started to notice that, something really interesting happened, is I became in some sense unrecognizable to myself. So that was, for me, the catalyst to kind of back up shop and come back home.
Yeah.
And I share this with folks too, because, you know, I share this out loud because I'm sure there are volunteers that became very inculcated by maybe a culture in a way that is beneficial. But then also too, there is being immersed to a point whereby you lose track of who you've become. I share this with you because there's an unbelievable freedom that comes from being in a remote part of a country. And I think what's interesting is, you know, I remember thinking to myself as an American abroad, I could do no wrong. I'm not sure if that resonates with you, but I remember feeling that in some instances.
Mm-hmm.
And so I share this with your audience because I think it's important to kind of question, when in our lives and what moments do we become unrecognizable to ourselves in any relationship,
right?
With our village, with our work, with our significant others?
Yeah.
Do you like the person that you're becoming in that space? And if the answer is no, then it's time to kind of make a move.
Exactly.
And so that's what happened to me for me to come back to the United States.
Wow. That is incredibly powerful. Thanks for sharing. This is Jobs with Jody. Today, I'm joined by RPCV Buck Dashahadi, sharing his life lessons learned in Afghanistan and here in the States as a filmmaker and in many different roles. Baktash, you came back. When did you get into film then? Did you come back with ideas in your mind about, wow, I've got to somehow process this? Or how did that happen?
Yeah. So when I came back from Afghanistan, I was very much interested in kind of having real conversations about what it meant to be in the grassroots, well, of any environment. Because what I realized was, you know, I didn't think the conversations on a very high level actually mapped to what was happening on the local level. And I wanted to basically do work that was about what it meant to be on the ground, about what it meant to be shoulder to shoulder with people. And that largely was not just informed by Afghanistan, it was largely also informed by my Peace Corps experience. You know, like, what is it like to be in Mozambique? What is it like to live in a state of, well, uncertainty? What is it like to live in a state of not knowing where you're going to get your next meal? Mm-hmm. And so I was very much interested in kind of like, well, if we're talking about state building, that's one thing, but what does it actually look like on a granular level? That's where the meeting of these worlds, where I was kind of primed to kind of think about the world that way and be interested in that kind of work. And this world of filmmaking came together. And specifically what happened was a friend who was approached by two filmmakers had too much on her plate and wasn't able to kind of do this work. And so she suggested me and recommended me as a translator for a film. So two filmmakers, two documentarians reached out to me and said, we have all this footage of Afghanistan and this film that we want to make, but we actually don't know how to make the best sense of it. Will you help us? I had them share footage. And when I watched the footage, I was completely enchanted and enamored. And I basically said to them, I'd be happy to translate this film. In fact, I'll do it for extremely cheap. I'd be very interested to do this. Just let me work on this.
Yeah.
So it was a win-win situation because it was like exactly the sort of thing that I wanted to kind of share with the world. And so that was my entry, Jody, into filmmaking was through language.
And you got that experience by doing and being involved in a film, by doing the translation, all of that, because many people would say, well, how did you get into film if you didn't study film or anything like that?
That's right. That's right. And the thing about filmmaking is that there are many different facets of what it means to be in a production. It's not just being behind a camera.
Yeah.
It's not just directing. I mean, if you look at all the credits at the end of a film, you have to ask, who are all these people? There's a reason why the credits are minutes long.
Yeah.
It takes a tribe to make a film.
Yes. So you translated for that film. What was that film called?
Yep. So that film is called Frame by Frame.
Frame by
And that
frame.
Was acquired by Time Magazine as their first full-length feature film that they ever acquired.
Wow.
And so the film is about four photojournalists that put their lives at risk to capture the truth in a place like Afghanistan. And so I got involved in translation and then eventually raised funds for the film, became a producer, and then went around the country to share the film with audiences across the United States.
That is great. So you became a producer with that same film from your, wow, they were able to see your passion and just, you know, how much it meant to you and just, what a great project.
Yeah. And so really what I learned afterwards was not only did I enjoy the process, Jody, but really what I loved was going into theaters and not watching the film, but watching the audience's reaction to the film.
Yeah.
That's where I learned the power of story. That's when I realized that I wanted to be a storyteller.
Yeah.
Because that was the thing that was going to change people's minds about how they perceived a topic, a people, in a way that really just other ways aren't able to do.
Right. That's amazing. And that's great. Your ability to, you know, work to connect and work on storytelling. You are a great storyteller. How has that played out in your more recent films? I know you have one that, Renegade, is that right? Can you tell us a little bit about that one and then the two that you're in the works of making?
Sure, sure. So my most recent film is a film called Retrograde, which is about the last 9 months of the United States involvement in Afghanistan. And so it's a film about the U.S. Green Berets and the Afghan commandos coming together in Helmand Province as the Taliban's taking over the country province by province, and then eventually a collapse of Kabul at the end. I got involved as an executive producer. Film has done very well. It's a film about a tragedy, so it's not supposed to be a happy ending whatsoever. So the film captures, well, it's the first film ever to capture United States involvement in its ending ever in history. Mm. And so the film was commissioned by National Geographic.
Oh,
it's
wow.
out on Hulu and Disney Plus, where people can view it.
Great.
And the film was shortlisted for an Oscar. So it really captures the tragedy of what happened in Afghanistan. I think the monumental failure of how to end a war and how actually not to going forward, and what it means now to be an American. And what does it mean now to have 100,000 Afghan refugees littered and scattered across the United States?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. That's really very powerful. I am going to watch that. I have it on my to watch list because I do have Disney Plus.
Wonderful.
So absolutely, I will watch that one. And then can you tell us briefly about, I know you have two ideas right now or two films that you're working on. I remember you sharing a little bit about them to me recently. I'd love you to share with our listeners because they sound fascinating.
Sure. So Retrograde kind of set me up to kind of, well, I want to tell a few stories about what war does to us. In particular, the film that I'm working on really that's in development right now is a film that I'm directing that I'm calling right now Horses for Heroes, which is about the veterans of the war in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. In particular, I have two subjects who are American and two subjects who are Afghan, who I will take to a horse ranch in Santa Fe to expose them to the magical healing power of horses in their quest to overcome their PTSD and moral injury. So what I want to do is capture the similarities and differences between these veterans, Americans and Afghans, that both parties have served in Afghanistan.
Right.
The Americans are here. The two American subjects that I'm following have been back for a little bit and they're still dealing with PTSD and moral injury.
Understandable. Absolutely.
Understandable. Wow. And then the Afghan veterans were special forces soldiers who fought in Afghanistan, who then came over through the subsequent collapse of Afghanistan. So they're here all alone. And so what I want to do is to kind of share what war does to us. In particular, this isn't a film about war. This is actually a film about connection and what it means to be so distant from oneself.
Yeah.
Be so distant from other people. So through the exposure of horses, these people, these veterans, hopefully will be able to reconnect with themselves in a meaningful way. And so if we don't find a sense of, if we don't have the language, Jody, to be able to talk about what this war has done to us as a people, as a society, then I think it's a really big missed opportunity. Let me just share something that's astonishingly tragic.
Yeah.
It's tragic that 20 veterans a day commit suicide.
Yes, unbelievable.
And so what I want to do is be able to make a film about, what people go through and how there are visible wounds and there are invisible wounds, people that are suffering in silence.
Yeah.
And so what I want to do is be able to share what that means and actually make it accessible to the everyday American that hasn't served.
Yeah.
But everybody in America, and my belief is everybody knows somebody that served in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And the question is, what will we do about it? And so I'm also working on a film about what it means to be a refugee of the war, of the Afghan war in America right now. So I mentioned this earlier, but there are 100,000 and there are 30,000 still stuck in transit in places throughout the Middle East. So when the collapse of Afghanistan happened, all these refugees came onto the plains that everybody remembers. So now 100,000 Afghan refugees are scattered across America.
Right.
And this isn't the first wave of refugees. Let me just remind your audience that my family too came over in the 1980s. So we were the first wave. Now we're on the fourth wave of refugees. So the question is, what happens to a people that don't understand their sense of home or have to recreate their sense of home? How to find your sense of identity? How to find your sense of home and belonging? Your sense of, what is my relationship to my memory? And it's this deeply reflective thing about, what does it mean to be a person that's actually looking for a new home against their will? Like, people jumped onto those planes, not because they wanted to, but because they thought they were going to die.
Yeah.
What I want to do is to kind of really put a pin in it for folks to say, many refugees that are here aren't happy about being here. In fact, it's the opposite. They're here because they felt like they were going to die. And so they're here now. What will we do to welcome our neighbors? And this isn't just Afghan refugees. This is about anybody who fits the description of the other. And so I want this film to be about how to think and perceive of people that we have no idea about in a way that taps into our sense of imagination. What could these people be going through there that I don't know about, to create a greater sense of connection and engagement?
Right. Thank you. Well, thank you so much, Bhaktash, for sharing about your current work and your past work. And in closing, I would love to just ask you, what advice would you have for RPCVs who may come after you, right, on finding their own, whether it's passion or conducting, you know, a job search? Any final thoughts you might have for folks?
Yeah, what a great question. I think what I would say is, people decided to join the Peace Corps for a reason. Some people joined for a sense of adventure. Some people joined to serve. Some people joined to learn something. I would say, even when you come back to the United States, or even midway in your career, never lose that sense of adventure. Never lose that sense of radical curiosity about the world, because it'll serve you in a very beautiful way. And so I think that's my message, is lean into that sense of curiosity that took you to the Peace Corps, even when you're back in the United States. It'll never fail you.
That is wonderful. And I really appreciate it. And that brings this edition of Jobs with Jody to a close. Thank you so much to our inspirational guest, Bhaktash. Thank you for being here, for sharing a bit about yourself, your impassioned journey to explore connection and share that with the public. And to you, the audience, of course, for listening in. You can find this and all of our other Jobs with Jody podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many other podcast platform. So thank you so much, Bhaktash, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You have a wonderful day.